And we're holding on to some of Chess Omidbey's second line from the bottom. We learned yesterday about you sell a field, then generally speaking, automatically you're selling the trees in it as well, unless we said the trees are particularly important, the Chor of Amurka, the Sadhana Shikma, as we discussed yesterday. And then the last point we talked about was that the fact that the word Ilonos, which is the generic word for trees, by default does not include certain kinds of trees, namely palm trees and grapevines. Usually those go by another name, Dikli and Gufni, respectively, and therefore, for example, you say that I'm selling you the land minus the trees, then we have to see, minus the Ilonos, then we have to see what kind of trees there are on the land, and that'll determine what the seller is keeping for himself versus not. So the Gemara continues in that vein, talking within palm trees themselves. Omer Rav, Kol She'odem Lo B'Chevel, any tree that's tall enough that you have to go up to it by a rope, that you have to pull yourself up by a rope in order to collect the fruit. Now, Rashbam points out later on, this has to be talking about palm trees. Other kinds of trees, you have branches lower down, so you don't need ropes, no matter how tall the tree is. You just you get up from one branch to another. At most, maybe you need a ladder to get to the lowest branch, but then you go from one branch to another, and you pick the fruit. Palm trees, you have the trunk all the way up to the top, and you have the leaves and the fruit, the branches and the leaves and the fruit only at the top. So therefore, you're going to need, if it's tall enough, you're going to need a rope. So when it's tall enough that you need a, so before we were talking about, in other words, you have, there's the various types of trees, palm trees, grapevines versus other trees. Now we're talking about even within the palm trees themselves, Rav is saying there's a distinction. If the tree is tall enough that you need a rope to get to the top of it, so then it's called a tree, having shield. Then when you're saying, if he says, I'm selling you the field, but not the trees, then those would be included in it. Kol she'ein oden lo b'chevel, but if it's short enough that you don't need a rope to get to the top of it, lo havi shear, then it's not included in the shear at all. Meaning, so even if he says, I'm selling you the field, but not the trees, chutz, except for the trees, then a short palm tree like that would not be considered in that category. For that, to that extent, it's not considered a tree. That's the point of Rav. The Dayonim Gola Amri, on the other hand, the Dayonim of the Gola, Gola means Bavel in general, more specifically it means Nahadol, which was at that time was the center of Jewish life in Bavel. The Dayonim Gola are Shmuel, they're the famous Amora Shmuel, and Kauna, who we have, and he's less common in Chas, but we have him in a number of places here and there throughout Chas, mostly in Dinei Mamonos. He was a contemporary of Rav and Shmuel. So the Dayonei Gola, Shmuel and Kauna, who specialize in Dinei Mamonos, they give a different definition. It's not how tall the tree is, Kolsha Oil Kovshoi. It depends whether the yoke that you have on your oxen when you're plowing is going to bend it. Meaning, in other words, that Ashbam explains. So like this, you're around a tree, you need to plow around a tree because you want to break up the soil over there and allow the roots to penetrate into the ground and then for air to get to them and so forth. So you go around there with oxen to plow. If when the oxen are plowing and you have a yoke on their necks, and the yoke is a big heavy piece of wood, if the tree is weak enough, if it's thin enough that when it doesn't block the oxen with their yoke, they're able to just, when the yoke bumps into the tree, it'll bend it out of the way, and then the oxen will be able to continue further, then it's not considered a tree. Loi habi shear, then it wouldn't be considered, if he says, I'm selling you the field, but not the trees, then that wouldn't be included in the definition of trees. Kol she'ein oil kovshoi, and if the yoke does not bend it, meaning in other words that if the yoke bumps into that tree, you'll actually have to reroute around it because the yoke won't be able to pass over it. Have a shear, then it is considered a tree. And when he says that I'm leaving out the Ilonos, then it would include that. So according to Rav, it's a difference. It's the height that matters. According to Dayonei Gola, it's the thickness of the tree and the flexibility and pliability of the tree that matters. And the Gemara points out, the Leipzigi, Rav and the Dayonei Gola are not actually arguing. Hobbitifli, Hobbit Ilon. One definition is talking about palm trees. Rav's definition that makes it depend on the height depends on palm trees. It's talking about palm trees because then, since again, you don't have the crown of branches and leaves is only at the top. So therefore, with that kind of tree, it matters how tall it is in terms of whether you're leaving it for yourself or not. The Hobbi Ilani, as opposed to Shmuel and counter statement, is talking about other trees where there. It's a, you can't talk about whether you have to go up them, to them with a rope because you never need ropes for such trees anyway. You climb from one branch to another. So instead you go according to how pliable the tree is, whether the yoke will push it out of the way or whether you have to reroute around. The Rashbam adds the point, what about palm trees then? The fact is, even if a palm tree is thin and therefore oil kosher, nevertheless, if it's tall enough that you would need a rope to get up to it, then it still would be considered a tree for this purpose and would be included in what he's saying, I'm leaving the trees for myself. So when it comes to other trees, in other words, Rav's definition about a rope is not even relevant because you don't use a rope to get up to those trees. When it comes to palm trees, then you have we don't care about whether. So when it comes to other trees, the key thing is oil kovshay. When it comes to a palm tree, we don't look at oil kovshay at all. We look strictly at how tall it is, and whether you need a rope to get to the top. The Gemara says, Now we said in the Mishnah that there's two types of trees which are considered, in effect, a little field of their own. We said a chorov amurka, a carob tree that you grafted other branches onto it, and sadana shikma, a shikma tree that now has a trunk without branches. So we said those have a chashivus of their own, and therefore you say, I'm selling you a field, even if you say, I'm selling you a field and everything in it, all that does is it accomplishes that now all the metalplin in the field are sold, but not those types of trees. So the Gemara says, Bominir of Acha Bahunim Rav Sheshes, Chutz Mechoruv Ploini, Chutz Mesadan Ploini Mav. What would happen if the person says, when he's selling the field, I'm selling you the field exclusive of this particular carob tree or exclusive of this particular shikma tree? So what happens if there are other carob trees or other shikma trees in the field? Are those included? You could argue, oisei chorov hu delekoni. Maybe what it means is that he means to say only that particular carob tree you're not going to get. I'm going to keep it for myself. Ha shal choruvim koni, implying that he is saying I'm selling you all the other carob trees. Oduma shal choruvim nami lekoni. Or maybe you could say that he's not koina any of them, and the reason why he mentioned this one, so the Rashbam says, so it's like this, we learned earlier in the parak, we're going to learn again tomorrow, Bez Hashem, the machlokas of Rav Akiva and the Chachamim, about whether when you, for example, we said earlier in the parak, you sell a house, and you said the burr that's in the house is not included, so do you have to buy a right of way to that burr, or do we say that automatically together with the burr, goes a right of way to him. We talk about mochabai and yochab mocha, mochabai and ra mocha, all that. So maybe now when he says that I want to sell you the whole field except for this particular choruv. Now if he hadn't said anything, then of course all the choruvim would be left out of the sale, as we said in the Mishnah, all the choruvim I'm recovering. We're talking about. So maybe though now when he says chutz mecharuv, maybe he doesn't mean, so maybe he means, in other words, that fine, I'm willing to throw in all the other carob trees, but not this one. But maybe what he means is that once he says chutz mecharuv poini, what he means is that now he's not going to need to buy a right of way to it by mentioning that particular carob tree. Particularly, he's saying that I'm reserving for myself also a right of way, an easement to be able to get to that field. That would be according to Rav Akiva, and then according to the Chachamim, who anyway hold that he always has a right of way anyway. So fine, the Chachamim would say it means that he wanted that He wanted to keep ownership of that particular carob tree more than any of the other ones. And he doesn't want, as we learned yesterday, shufra the shtara. You want to write in the shtar, you want to make things unequivocal so that there's no argument about what's included and what's not. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he's meaning to sell all the other carob trees. So what would be the din? So that was the question of Acha Barahuna asked of Sheshes. Omalei, so of Sheshes answers him, like Kana, he hasn't acquired anything, the buyer. Not that particular carob tree and not any other one. Once he says, even though he says chutzmi chorav pliny, doesn't mean like your first possibility, means not that one, but I am acquiring all the other one. It means he's not acquiring any at all. Rav Acha Bar Huna asks him whether we have an abraisa chutz mechorav pliny chutz misadim pliny loikona. A braisa says that if he says except for the schoruv or except for the sadan, then he's not koina. Now my lav, whatever, doesn't the braisa mean osei choruv hod loikona? But pashtus it means he wasn't koina that particular carob tree. Ha shal choruv and kona, but he is acquiring the other ones. No, that's not what the braisa means. Means he's not koina any of them.
What kind of question is that? If he doesn't mention anything specific, it seems obvious that all the trees, all the kruvim, are not going to be included in the sale.
Did mention this particular one. That's what we're saying. You have 10 kruvim trees. You have 10 kruvim trees in the field. He says that I'm selling you the field except for this choruv. The question was, does that mean that he's selling the other 9 and just leaving this one for himself? Or does it mean that he's not selling any of them? And then, as the Rashbam said, the reason he mentioned this particular one is either according to Rabbi Akiva to mean that he doesn't need to buy a right of way to it, or according to the Chachamim that he's mentioning it for shufra the shtara to avoid arguments over that.
Why do you want to change the seller's mind by saying that what he says is not really what he means? He means one tree and this specific tree and nothing else.
But the fact is that if he meant the other trees, instead of saying except for this one, he should have clearly said, think of it, if he didn't say anything at all, none of the 10 trees would be sold because all 10 of them are part of Amurka. So now that he said, except for this one, if he actually meant I'm selling you the other 9, he should have explicitly said, I'm selling you the other 9, but I want to keep this one for myself. So therefore, maybe we have a reason to say, that's the thing. So maybe we have a reason to say that he means that he doesn't want to sell any of them, because by not saying anything, he would have automatically meant all of them by mentioning this particular one that he wants to keep is either because of a right of way or because of shufra the shtara.
That's a flawed logic. If he didn't say anything, I would say, okay. But the fact that he said just this tree, how can you infer from that it includes all the other ones? It doesn't make sense.
Because the very fact that if he wanted to include the other ones, then he should have said, I'm including all the other ones. The Gemara is going to point out soon. The Gemara is going to point out that, for example, imagine if I say, imagine if I'm selling you my field and I say I'm selling you this field but not that field. Would that imply that I'm only leaving out that other field but I'm selling you all my other fields? Of course not. I'm only selling you one field. So the same way, just because he says to me here. No, but that's the point. In other words, if I own 10 fields and I say I'm selling you the field that I own on Montgomery Street but not the one on Crown Street, does that mean I'm automatically selling you the ones on Carroll and President and Union and so forth? Of course not. I'm only saying I'm selling you one field. I mentioned the one on Crown Street for whatever reason that I chose to. Doesn't have a bearing on the other ones. The same way, just because he mentioned one carob tree doesn't mean that automatically he's including all the other ones.
Yeah, but it's not a good example because different fields are not attached to each other. He's talking about one tree in one specific field.
The whole point is, we established in the Mishnah that these trees, a Chorav HaMurkav and a Murkav and a Sadan HaShikma, in effect are mini fields in and of their own.
But we're not talking about a specific type of tree here.
No, we are. We're talking about Chorav HaMurkav. We're talking about the type of tree that wouldn't be included if he hadn't said anything. So now we're saying just because he said something doesn't necessarily mean that all the other ones are included.
All the other what? All the other trees or all the other
Kruvim? Of this type. All the other Chorav Amruch. We're not talking about all the other trees in the field. Those are included anyway. We're talking about within the Chorovim. There are 10 Chorav Amruchavs in this field. And he's saying, I'm selling you the field, except for one of them, doesn't mean, says Rav Sheshes, that he automatically means to include all the other 9. Let's go on.
And it doesn't mean the opposite either.
That was Rach's question. Let's continue, and it'll become clearer. By the way, though, the Rashbam brings a Gersa over here that existed in Gemara's in his times that says that the Braisa said that the Braisa, the way we have it printed in the Gemara, is that when he says Chutz Mechoruf Ploini, then it means Loitona. Now there was a Gersa Loitona Oisai that he wasn't acquiring it. But Rashbam says, how could that be? Then of course it means he hasn't acquired it, but he acquired the other one. On the other hand, Tosfos brings that Gersa and says that what it would mean is, Rabbi Hananel has such a Gersa as well, that it means, in other words, that he wouldn't necessarily own the tree, but at least he would be entitled to the monetary value of it. Or we would say that he's not entitled to the monetary value of that tree, but he might be entitled to an equivalent amount for the other ones.
That's a different debate. Yeah,
that's a different thing, right? Anyway, the Rashbam does reject that Gersa altogether. Anyway, the point is, Rav Sheshes continues, Teda, after all, you can think about it, you can prove it. If Reuven were to say to Shimon, I'm selling you this field, but exclusive of that field, and again, like in our example before, he has other fields as well, are you going to say, are you going to say that he's not koina that one because he left it out, but he is automatically koina the other ones? Of course not. He only said, I'm selling you one field. Why he mentioned the chutz misad of Pliny, you could say, for whatever reason, it could even be just a shtus that he mentioned an unnecessary point. Hohanami, loikana, the same way over here, just because he mentioned that I don't want to sell you one particular carob tree doesn't mean one particular chorav amurkav doesn't necessarily mean that he means to include all the other ones. Sometimes we say that a person is saying something during a sale. We often try to say that what a person is saying during a sale has significance, but sometimes we say that sometimes we have no choice but to say that a person is stam saying words that don't mean anything.
That's the whole idea. I mean, yes and no, because you cannot say also the opposite, that person didn't mean something else. How would you know?
Well, that's the point. We can only go based on what he said. He clearly said that he's leaving out this tree that he's keeping for himself. We can't necessarily deduce from that he means to sell all the other trees. Therefore, we assume none of that type of tree, which is not included with the sale of a field, is included. Why he mentioned this one? Whatever reason he mentioned this one, you could say because of Shufra the Shtarah, you could say because of Derech or whatever, doesn't mean that, so it would be, in other words, you could say, for example, that it means that now he's reserving for himself a right of way to that one, but not to all the other 9, or that he wrote this one for Shufra the Shtarah, so there's no argument about that one, and he's not concerned about if there's going to be arguments about the other ones, let's say. Therefore, Sahochinami Leikona, the same way over here, he's not koina. The Ikadamri, that he's not koina any of the trees. He said exclusive of this tree means, you know, it was actually exclusive of all the cherubim, and then maybe we would say this one has a special status among them. So he hasn't acquired any of the cherubim. In order for him to acquire them, he would actually have to write them in the shtar. He would have to say, I'm selling you this cherub, this cherub, this cherub, but not that one. Yeah. Another version of the discussion goes like this. In the second version, Bomir of Achaba Hunum of Sheshes, Chutzmechatsi Chorub Ploini, Chutzmechatsi Sadan Ploini Mahu. Now, in the first version, he was asking him where he says exclusive of an entire Chorub or an entire Sadan Shikma. And the question was whether by mentioning that one, he means to implicitly say that he's selling all the other ones. Now, in the second version, he's asking about what if he says, I'm selling you everything except for half of a particular choru or half of a particular sadam. So now, Mahu, what would be the din? Shalcha Reuven Vada Leikoni. So now there'd be no question, we would say that, that he's certainly not koina the other ones, because like we said before, when he's selling one field and saying minus another one, the question would be, would we say that at least by saying I'm keeping half this carob tree for myself, does that imply that he is selling the other half? Or maybe not. Again, maybe he's mentioning half of it for sentimental reasons or because he wants a right of way to that half of one or whatever. But not necessarily, would he be meaning to actually sell half of it and keep half of it. And again, Omale Leikoni, and Avshashis tells him even in that case, the guy is not cutting a half the field. We don't say by saying half a carob tree, he means to him that I'm keeping, that he means to imply I'm selling you the other half. Rather, it means I'm mentioning that half for reasons of my own, but in fact, I'm keeping the other half for myself as well. Again, if he meant to actually sell that half, he would have said so, I'm selling you this field, and with it, I'm selling you half of this carob tree. And again, Esvei, again in the second version, he asks him from the same braisa, or from a similar braisa as before, chutz mechatzi chorub ploini, chutz mechatzi tshadin ploini, shal chorub in leikana, that if he says, except for half of a certain chorub, or except for a certain for half of a certain sadan, then he's not koina the other chorubim, he's not koina the other carob trees. My love, shal chorub in leikana, ha mashashir ba'ose chorub kana, doesn't the braisa mean to imply that at least he is acquiring the half of the carob tree that he didn't mention. Omaloy, and Rav Sheshis again tells him, Loy, after the Mashashir Ba'usechor of Nami Leikana, no, he's not koina the other half of that carob tree either. Teda, and you can prove it, Di'ilu Omaloy Sadi Mechor Lachot Mechatsi Sadi Ploini. Again, if you were to say, I'm selling you this field of mine to use our example before, I'm selling you this field of mine on Montgomery Street, but I'm not selling you half of my field on Crown Street. Would he say, would he say he's not acquiring that half, but he is acquiring the other half of that field? Of course not. He's only selling him one field to begin with. Ella Loikoni, so he's not koina anything of the other one. Hokinami Loikoni, the same thing over here. When he says half the tree, he just means, why he's mentioning half the tree, whatever. Sometimes people say unnecessary, foolish things, but he doesn't mean to say that I am selling you the other half. If he actually meant to sell him the other half, he would have said so explicitly. Okay. So again, the Rashbam brings over here the Girsa, which Tosfos mentions and then says there's a possibility, a Ladomi that we're talking about over here, that it means that maybe when he mentions that field or half a field that he's leaving for himself, maybe he means, in other words, that he's reserving for himself the value of it. So here he'd be saying the value of this carob tree or this half tree, and Rashbam says this must be a mistake that somebody wanted to explain, somebody thought to explain. Well, why would he say chutz misada ploini, or why would he say chutz mechorub ploini, if not for the fact that he meant it to make a monetary difference? But the Rashbam says it doesn't really belong in the Gemara. However, again, Tosfos says that there is we can justify it. What it would mean is, in other words, that he wouldn't say that he's not koina even the value of the carob tree, the value that it adds to the field. He wouldn't be koina that. Okay, so the bottom line is that yes, even you mention except for a particular palm tree, except for a particular carob tree or whatever, doesn't mean implicitly all the other ones are included. We say that no, it means he mentioned this one for whatever particular reason, or maybe even for no reason at all, but nevertheless, we can't deduce from it that he sold all the other ones. Okay. Having brought now a machloikas of Rav and Dayone Goyla, which we said about the definition of a tree in terms of when he says, I'm selling you the land except for the trees. So now the Gemara brings another machloikas is going to eventually bring another machloikas involving Dayone Goyla. First, the Gemara is going to bring a separate case, which is not really directly connected with what we said before. And eventually, in the course of the Sugya, we're going to bring in the opinion of Dayone Goyla.
One second. Yeah. Are you, in Dine Mamonis, are you going to say from this example of a sale of a tree that all other types of sales that are implicit are not valid? Is that what you, is that what the Gemara is saying?
The subject of Or Perek, the subject of Or Perek and the subsequent Perekim is that when you're selling something and you're not specifying what is and isn't included, then we have rules to determine what is included and what isn't included. You have the rules that it says in these Perekim, you have Minigam and Dina, which overrides it, etc. Here was saying that he did say something. He did say, I'm selling you this tree, but not, I'm selling you this field, but not this choruv that's in it. What Rav Sheshes is saying in both versions of the, in both versions of the Gemara is that even though he mentioned one particular tree or even half a tree doesn't mean that implicitly he's selling all the other ones. We still go according to the usual rules and we say the sale of a field does not include a choruv amurkam and does not include a sadan shikma. The fact that he mentioned one particular one and excluded it from the sale doesn't mean that he implicitly means to include all the other ones. If he wanted to include the other ones, he would have had to say them. The same way as if he had said nothing at all, we would say the choruv trees are not sold. And if he wants to sell them, he would have to actually say explicitly, I'm selling you the field and all the choruv amurkavs in it. The same way, when he says, I'm selling you the field, but I'm keeping one choruv amurkav for myself, we don't say that it means that he's including all the other ones.
Well, that's not my question. My question was, are you going to apply this principle to karka only, or are you going to apply it to any type of sale, or are you going to imply it to anything that you say, not necessarily a sale? Is that what the Gemara means?
Well, I mean, what we're saying is that in this particular case, we're sort of disregarding what he's saying and saying it doesn't mean to give any more rights to the other person because it should have said it explicitly. It's going to apply. One second. The Pashtus is going to apply to other kinds of sales as well. When we talk in the following Perekim about selling metalplin, and we talk about what's included when you're selling this metalplin, what's included with it and what's not. The Pashtus, I guess we would say something similar. When it comes to other areas in halacha, many times we try to say that what a person says has significance, ain't on a moitzi dvar of levatala, but apparently there are cases like this where we say that no, it is levatala, and it's not really, at most it would be what the Rashbam says, either according to Rabbi Akiva, that he's talking about a right of, that he's reserving for himself in addition, a right of way, or according to the Chachamim, that he's mentioning it for shofar of the shtara.
We know there are cases. That's the fact that we have this Gemara is a proof that there are cases. But that, again, is not what I'm asking. What I'm asking is this case applicable to other types of sales or to other types of expressions?
So it's so at the Pashtus, it would be applicable to other types of sales. I'm not sure I see why not. As far as other cases, I don't know. I mean, I guess it might have to be, it might be different depending on different cases. I don't know.
Well, that's what we have to find out. Could you look it up?
I can try to see, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, fine.
All right, let's go on. So Rav Amram asked Rav Chista, if a person deposits something else for safekeeping and he writes out a shtar. Now, usually you deposit something by somebody for safekeeping. You don't write out a shtar. You give it to him and he said he's going to watch it. And we had all the dinim about that in Bav Mitzvah. Here he actually had a shtar written out. The point is, what that shtar accomplishes, the Rashbam points out, now later on, the shomer can't claim, you never gave me this thing to watch, because he has a shtar. So the question was, if he deposits by him by a shtar, now later on, the shomer says that I returned it to you. Now, you do have, earlier in the Masechta, in the previous parak, the Gemara had mentioned, the point that if you're mafkid by somebody with Edim, then the other guy does not have to return it in the presence of Edim. So if there had just been Edim for the Pichodin, but not a shtar, then fine, he would be believed to say that I return it. The question is, Rav Amram says, what about over here where there's a shtar? Now, on the one hand, you could say he has a migui. He could have said nemsu. He could have said that there was an oinus that happened to it. And as a shrem chinam or shrem sachar, he would be potter. He would be potter from pay. He has to take shvua, but he would be potter from paying. So therefore, so he has a migui to say that. So therefore, instead, he could say, I returned it. Do we say that mi amrin and migudi boyom and nemsu meheman? Do we say, since he has a migui, he could have said that it was Nenas, that an unavoidable accident happened it, a Dilma, hash for Nami Mehaman, so therefore that gives him a migui, and therefore he can say yes, a Dilma omele shtarach biyadi my boy. Or maybe not, maybe the owner of the object can say that, listen, you're saying that you returned the thing and you want to be believed of the migui. If you had returned it, you would have taken the shtar from me back, so I don't come and try to collect it again, right? So therefore, the very fact that I still have the shtar shows that you didn't return it. Tosfos actually draws a distinction. Tosfos points out, now we do have a case where a person borrowed money from somebody else, and we believe him afterwards to say that it was paid, even though the shtar is still in the hands of the malva. So Tosfos gives a few reasons. First of all, because when it comes to a shtar halva, it's the, usually the, we're going to learn at the end of the Masechta, that the loiva is supposed to be the one paying for the writing of that shtar. Sometimes the loiva is short of money. After all, that's why he's borrowing money in the first place. Sometimes he's so short of money that he can't even afford to pay the sofer. So then the malva lays out the money for that, and later on the loiva is going to have to pay him for it. So therefore, he might well keep the shtar, because even though the loan itself has been paid off, because he's waiting for the loiva to pay off that fee for the sofer as well. So therefore, the fact that he has the shtar doesn't necessarily prove that the halvar wasn't paid off. And then Tosfos goes and discusses a couple of other points as well. One of them is, after all, when somebody lends you money, he did you a big favor. So therefore, you might pay him back the loan and not demand back the shtar right away, as opposed to by pekodin. Okay, if you're the one who's doing a favor for him by watching. Anyway, the point is that, so that's the question. Do we say, basically, the question boils down to, does he have a migui that he could say nansu or not? Or is the migui like a migui bim claim edim, where the migui, where the possible claim that he could have made is contradicted by edim, and here the possible claim that I paid you back, that I gave you back the thing, is contradicted by the fact that the shtar still exists in the hand of the master. Omolei Mehaman. So that was Rav Amram asked Rav Chista. So Rav Chista answers, he is believed, he does have a migui, that he could say that he could have said nansu, so therefore we believe him to say that he returned it. The question still is, Valemele shtarach biyadi my boy. Okay, but why not? The fact is, he could say, shtarach biyadi my boy. What is the shtar doing in your hand? Meaning, in other words, now he seems to be repeating himself. So a few of the Mephoshim, the Rashba and some other Mephoshim explain that Rav Amram is saying basically, fine, you've given me a look, Rav Chisti, you give me an answer, but you haven't given me a logical basis for your answer. Yeah, you're telling me that he has a migui. But why? The fact is, that we need to understand why is the claim of Shtarach Yodi, my boy, not enough to undo that migui. So Tosfos says that no. When Rav Chisda told Rav Amram that Mehaman, he's believed, Rav Amram thought it meant that he's believed even without a shavua. So the question is now, then why? Shtarach biyadi my boy, at least he should require, in other words, it sounds like you're saying he's not even believed from a migri, it sounds like he's just believed on his word to say that I returned it without a shvua, but why? At most, you would say that he has a migui, and if he has a migui, then that would require a shvua, which is going to be the next piece of the Gemara. As far as Tosfos's previous point, that to draw a distinction between a shtar halva, where even if the shtar is still in the malva's hand, we still say it may well be believable that he paid back, versus over here, and Rav Amram knows that, versus over here when it comes to a pikadon, where Rav Amram is not sure. So again, Tosfos had said there's a few reasons why there's a difference. Other Rishonim point out that the Ramban and the Rashba point out another point, is that when it comes to the migui of the, in the case of the pikadon, is stronger than the migui by the borrower, because in the case of the pikadon, it's definitely a valid shtar, and the only thing he can do is claim that there was an onus, which obviously wouldn't be reflected by the shtar. when it comes to a halva, it's not just that you have a shtar. The shtar has to be mekuyam. You have to have the edim. You have to have the edim certify, or other people certify, that these are the edim's signature. And only because moedav a shtar shekosva, only because the loiva admits that the shtar was written, that the shtar is valid, only that gives it validity without being mekayim it. And therefore, they're saying therefore, in other words, it's more than a migra, it's a pesha also, a pesha hitir. The whole validity of the shtar depends on what he says. So therefore, he has a much stronger, the shomer has a much weaker migri. The shomer's migri would require him to say either nensu, or either that there was an onus, or that I returned it, whereas in the case of the loive, he has an even stronger one, because he could, to begin with, say that the whole shtar is forged. So that's the Ramban, and the Rashba make that point. Anyway, again, going back to the Gemara, so Rav Chista has said that he's believed, so Rav Amram says, why? Shtarach b'yadi my boy. So according to Tosfos, the point of the question is, in other words, that it sounds like you're saying he's believed without a migri. Why? At most, he has a migri, so you should have to swear. According to the Rashba, the question is, okay, I hear that you're telling me he's believed, but why? What happened to the shtarach v'yadi my boyish? Omale, son of Chista answers him, v'litai mech, nu, according to your svara that you're even asking the question, after all, if the shomer says that there was an onus, me motzi omale shtarach b'yadi my boy, would the maskid be able to say, yeah, but then why is your shtar in my hand? Obviously, the onus and the shtar have nothing to do with each other. The onus is not going to be reflected in the shtar. So, when he says I returned it, we can still say that it's a migri. It's not a migri against Edim. It could be for whatever reason he didn't bother picking up the shtar when he returned it. But no matter what, in other words, Rav Chista is saying the fact is he would always be able to claim nensu, and the shtar wouldn't contradict that. So therefore we can believe him even when he says that I returned it, and to say that it means, okay, so you just didn't bother, I just didn't bother asking for the shtar back. That's according to the Rashbam. Marsha points out there's a problem with that answer then. It's called Ikur Chosim and Asefer. The answer requires us to put a lot more into the Gemara than it says. All he's saying is that when it's Nensu, how could he say Shtarach B'yadi my boy? And the Rashbam is filling in this whole detail that it means that if he said Nensu, he would be believed, and therefore even now we believe him with a migri. So therefore Marsha says that would explain why Tosfos had a different view of the matter. Why Tosfos is explaining that, of course, he knew that it's like a migri makom edim, that he knows that it's not a migri makom edim. But he's asking, then at least shouldn't he have to swear? Fine, he has a migri, but shouldn't he have to swear? Okay. Anyway, Omale. So Rav Amram answers back. So Rav Amram answers back. Okay. So you're telling me that because he could say Nensu, therefore that gives him a basis for me. But Omale. But Rav Amram says Soif, Kiyomale Nensu, Lav Shavua Boy. Fine. But after all, if he said Nensu, wouldn't he have to take a Shavua? Because a Shomer who claims Nensu has to take a Shavua. So, and here you're saying Neman, which sounds like it means that he's believed even without a Shavua. So what are you talking about? So again, according to Rashbam, the question is straightforward. Why are you saying he's believed without a Shavua? According to Tosfos, even earlier in the discussion, Rav Amram thought that when he says Neman means without a Shavua, and the question is, well, then what? So Rav Chista says, fine, that's what I mean. When I say that he's believed, I mean that he can take a shavua, that it was in fact Nansu, or that it was, or if he's claiming that he returned it, then he would have to swear. So fine, one way or the other, he would have to swear. It's true. But nevertheless, once he does, then the fact that the same way as when there's a shtar, when there's still an outstanding shtar, doesn't contradict the claim of Nensu, the same way he still has a migri even when there is a shtar, and therefore he could say, and therefore he could also say, Hechzauti, I returned it. Tosfos actually discusses that the shvur we're talking about over here, now if he claims Nensu, that's of course a shvur d'araisa. when we talk about it, we hear shvua that he would have to swear that he returned it, might actually be a shvua d'rabbanan. Now, Rishonim will learn that it would be a shvua d'oraisa, but Tosfos learns that it would be a shvua d'rabbanan. Now, there's a shvua d'rabbanan called shvuas hesis. This is something else, Tosfos says. This is a shvua d'rabbanan that came before the concept of shvuas hesis, which came about only in the middle of the times of Amoraim, of Nachman. Made that takana. But here we'd be talking about a shvua, and here we'd be talking about a shvua d'rabbanan that existed before that. Okay. Well, the Gemara says, Lema b'plukta dahani tanoi. Well, it comes out so far, we're saying that Rav Chista and Rav Amram are we're saying that Rav Chista's din, Rav Chista is telling us a din that a shomer is believed to say hechzarti, and he has a migri for it, even if there's a shtar against him. So Lema b'plukta dahani tanoi. Would we have to say that Rav Chista's din is subject to a machlokas tanoim and not everybody would agree to it? The Tanya, we learn in a brisa, shtar kis hayotza al yisoyim. When you have a shtar kis means a shtar of an investment. Now we learned back in Bava Metzia, and the Gemara is going to mention it over here also, that sometimes what you have is you invest money with somebody else, sometimes you have with your partners, you each equally investing and you each equally managing the business. Here rather what we're talking about is what's called an iska, which is I'm providing the capital and you're providing the I'm providing the investment and you're providing the work and the and then to make a profit from it. So I'm like a venture capitalist funding your startup business and you're going to go manage the business. We learned in Bava Metzia, we're gonna learn over here, that the Chachamim consider the money that's invested for the Iska to be palga milga pikadim. Half of it is considered a loan, half of it is considered a pikadin. And the point of it is that a milveh, you have greater responsibility. You borrow money, you have to pay it back, no matter you can't claim onus or whatever and get out of paying and get out of paying a loan. On the other hand, you can't have it being all milveh because then the investor is not going to be able to make a profit. Anything extra you return him is going to be ribs. So therefore, so you have a half that is considered a pikadin, so that you can make a profit on it. And then, as we learned in Bava Metzia extensively in Ezo Neshech, then you have to structure the deal in such a way to avoid issues of ribis, so you can't have that the investor gets exactly half the profits, because that would be a problem of ribis. You have to have that he's paying the managing partner a salary, at least a nominal salary, and it has to be that they make the arrangement that it's not half and half, but two thirds and one third, or whatever fraction. So now Reuven and Shimon had made an iska. Reuven invested money with and gave shit to Shimon with Shimon, and Shimon is managing the business. So Reuven has a shtar to that effect that they made this iska. Later on, now Shimon passes away, and Reuven is taking out that shtar against the Yisrael. So that he deposited, that he invested X amount of money with their father. So now he's saying, I want my money back. Meanwhile, the Yisraimim don't know, did their father. So Rashbam says there are two possibilities. Either the Yisraimim don't know. They're saying maybe our father already paid you back the investment plus whatever profits you're supposed to get, or maybe even they're claiming a tainus bori that we know that he paid you back already. Now, if it was a regular milveh that Ashbam goes on to point out, there's no question that when Shimon passes away, then Reuven would swear and be able to collect from the Yisraimim. Because obviously by a milveh you can't say nansu, it doesn't matter whether there's an onus or not, you're still on the hook for the money. The only shrua would be that he could say that the shvua would be that he didn't receive anything back from the loiva. In other words, you could have a case that Ashbam goes on to point out when Reuven goes and takes Shimon to Beis Din and says, I owe you money. You owe me money. I lent you money. Where's my money? Shimon could counterclaim, instead of me swearing that I don't owe you, you swear that I do owe you and then I'll pay. And that would be a valid claim and Reuven would then have to swear. So now, Yisraimim, as we have the usual rule throughout Shas, we based and have to advance on their behalf any argument that could have been advanced on their behalf in based in. So therefore, there's no question anyway when a person collects from Yisraelim, he has to swear. So there's no question if it was all Milva, then it would be very straightforward. Reuven would swear and collect, and that would be that. Now, though, that it's half Milva, half Pekodin, so now it's not so simple. So Dayanim Gola Ami Nishva V'Goyva Kolo. So the Dayanim of the Gola, which again we said is Shmuel and Parna, they hold that he would swear and collect the whole thing. Strictly speaking, actually, yes. Yeah, so he'd swear and collect, and then he would be able to collect the whole amount. So he would swear that he actually invested, that he invested that amount, and that father, and that their father of the Yisomim didn't pay it back, and then he would collect the whole thing. The Dayoni Eretz Yisrael Amri, on the other hand, the Dayonim of Eretz Yisrael, which is Rab Ami and Rab Asi, they say Nishva V'Goyva Mechze. He can swear, but he's only going to collect half. He's going to collect half, as the Gemara is going to work out why that is. Actually, Tosfos says, according to the Dayanei Eretz Yisrael, he wouldn't swear that he's owed the whole thing, because what's the point? If he's only going to collect half anyway, it would be rather like at the beginning of Bava Metzia, that he swears that I'm not owed less than half of it. I'll bet a chak yav with the talus over there, Zeh Ma'ani Metzasiya, etc., where each one swears that I owe not less than half the talus. So here it would be the same thing, that I'm owed not less than half this month. Anyway, the machloik at the under the machloik is being as follows. Now, both the Dayanim of Eretz Yisrael and the Dayanim of Chutz Laaretz, both Rav Ami and Rav Asi, and Shmuel and Tauna, all four of them agree with the concept that the Chachamim of Nahadah said, to Ami Nahadah, Hay Iska, Palga Milva, Palga Bikodin. That an Iska, like we said, is considered to be divided up. Half of it is considered to be a milva, namely that the managing partner is required to pay it back no matter what. And the other hand is considered a pikadin, such that he could claim with that nansu or whatever other claim that would pop to him. And again, we have to then structure the deal in such a way as to avoid issues of riddance. So given that, my lab bahokamithagi. So now to relate this back to what Rav Chista was saying, when a person says, I already gave back the pikadin that you gave me, and we're saying that he has a migri that he could have said nansu, so it seems that Rav Chista's statement is not universally agreed to. My lab bahokamithagi. It would seem that the machlokas between the Dayane Gola and the Dayane Eretz Yisrael is on this point. Do we accept Rav Chista's point or not? The Marasavi Motze Omele Shtorach Biyadi Maibari, that the Dayane Gola, who say that he can collect the whole thing, would say that, what do you mean? If your father was alive, he couldn't say, I have a migri that nansu. You could tell him back, Shtorach Biyadi Maibari. Well, why is the shtar still in my possession? And therefore, we can't claim that on behalf of the Yisomim, and we can't claim that on behalf of the Yisomim as well. Therefore, he would be able to, swear and collect the whole thing. Now, Tosfos points out, so what? Why don't we claim on their behalf Nansu? Fine, they can't claim he paid it back because the shtar contradicts that. Why can't we claim on behalf of the Yisomim Nansu? So Tosfos says the reason is because Oynes is a very rare thing, and we're not going to claim such a rare thing on behalf of the Yisomim. If there really was an Oynes, there would be a coil. So either their father maybe could get away with saying Nansu, but we, based in, are not going to advance such an argument on their behalf. That's according to Tosfos. Then there's a variety of Rishonim give different answers. The Baal HaMor on the Rif discusses this. He says if there was an onus, then the father would feel that the Gemara is going to talk about we would expect him if the thing really was paid off, he should have told his children before he passed away. So therefore, the Baal HaMor says the Gemara is figuring that only if there was an onus, then look, you can't expect the investor to be aware of that onus. So therefore, he would make sure to tell them, so they in turn could report back to the investor. But maybe that if he returned it, the Baal HaMor says, look, is he going to suspect the investor of trying to collect the same money twice? No. So therefore, he might not bother telling them. That's why the Gemara doesn't assume that the Yisroelim could claim Nansu, because if they were to claim Nansu, then the question would be, well, then you have to know that. You can't claim Nansu without your father having told you. And then the Ramban discusses that, and then discusses another answer. He explains that that yes, the Yisraelim could say that they returned it, or that it was Nenas. So why don't we argue that on behalf of the Yisraelim? Because again, you have the Chazaka, the fact that Shtarach V'yodi my boy, that not only blocks them from saying that they returned it, because then what the Shtar is still doing in their hand, it also blocks them from saying the Oynas, because similar to what the Baal Amor says, and not that he would have told them, but he would have told the investor right away that there was an Oynas, and he would have taken, and he would have gotten back the Shtar. So all of this assumes that we're talking about children, Yisraelim, by the way. The Ravid has a whole other explanation, which is that the Ritva brings in his name, that we're actually talking about adult Yisraelim. And then, like the Rashbam had said at the beginning, they're actually not claiming a Tainas Shema. Maybe our father paid you. They're actually claiming a Tainas Bori and saying for sure that he returned it. So in effect, they're saying that we know there was no onus, that he returned it. Therefore, we can't advance an argument on their behalf that there was an onus. Anyway, whatever the case, you have several understandings of this point over here, but the point is, it seems that the Dayone Gola don't accept any claim on their behalf because Shtorach B'yodi my boy, Omar Sovalayamri, whereas the Dayone Eretz Yisrael don't say that, and therefore they could claim that there was an onus, therefore they could also claim that it was paid off. So therefore they're saying the most that the investor would be able to collect from them would be half the amount. He would be able to claim the half that's the milva, but not the half of the pikadin, because for that it sounds like they would have a migui to say that he returned it because they could have said there was an oinus. So it seems then that the Dayoni Eretz Yisrael and the Dayoni Gola are arguing about what Rav Chista says, whether we accept that or not. And the Gemara says, Loi, not necessarily. Dekule Alma Islahu de Rav Chista. Both the Dayoni Gola and the Dayoni Eretz Yisrael may well agree with Rav Chista that the Shomer does have the ability to say that I returned it and he has a migri because he could have said Nansu. Rather, the Machloikas is over here as follows. The Mar Sava im Isad Pare, the Dayone Gola says, you know what, if the father had paid off the investor before he passed away, Meimar Haba Omer, he would have told them before he passed away that he gave it back. So now he didn't tell them, and the investor has the shtar, so that prevents them from being able to say that we paid it. Therefore the investor can say that I can say that you owe me the whole amount, and he can swear, fine, he has to swear because he's collecting from the assignment, but he can still collect the whole amount. So nothing to do with whether ordinarily a person who's watching a pikadin has a migui, normally he might, but in this case, if he in fact had returned the amount, then he would have told his children, so we can't say so. If he didn't, then that itself takes away their ability to make that argument. Or Mar Sava, where the Dayoni Eretz Yisrael hold, look, Eimah Malach Hamavis with the answer. You could say the Malach Hamavis got him all of a sudden, and he didn't have a chance to tell his children before he passed away. Or the Ritva says, even if he passed away in a calm, peaceful way, it wasn't like he all of a sudden dropped dead on the spot. But still, you could have Malach Hamavis' answer would be that he forgot on his deathbed to be able to give them this detail. So that doesn't show necessarily that it wasn't paid off. He may have just. And not had the ability to or forgotten to tell them that detail. So therefore, we can still say that they owe only half of it, say the Dayoni Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Sholach Rav Huna Ba'Ovin. Rav Huna Ba'Ovin sent a message from Eretz Yisrael to the Chachamim in Babel. Number one, Hamafkid Eitz Chaveda B'Shtar, when a person deposits something for safekeeping with it, and he has a shtar to that effect, like we talked about. And later on, the Shomer says, I returned it to you, Neman. Then we do believe him. So like Rav Chista says, he has a migui because he could have said Nansu. And another din, Rav Huna Ba'ovin sent in his letter, that when you have this shtar about an iska that's coming out against the Yisraelim, where again, the investor, Reuven, is bringing out the shtar and saying, your father still owes me the money, nishba v'goyva kuloi, then he can swear and collect the whole thing, like the Dayoni Gola. So Gemara says, Tarti, don't you have two contradictory dinim? We just said before that the Dayanei Gola seem to not hold like Rav Chisda. And the answer is, like the Gemara says, the same answer as we said before, Shani Hossam, the Imis of the Pare, Neima Hava Omar, we do accept Rav Huna Bar Oven is taking the Svara that if he had paid back, he would have told them before he passed away, but not like the Dayanei Eretz Yisrael, who say, after all, maybe the Malach HaMavis got him suddenly, and he wasn't able to say, but rather the Rav Huna Bar Oven says, no, we do have to say that he would have told them if he had paid it, and therefore if he didn't, then they don't have their Mib. In the case, if the Shomer himself was still alive, then we would accept Rav Chisda's din and say that he has a migui. But because he failed to tell them before he passed away, therefore that weakened their ability to make some migui, and therefore they can't. And why they can't claim Nansu is the various points from the Rishonim that we said before, whether because Nansu is such an unusual case that we can't advance such an argument on their behalf, or because if there was Nansu, then the father should have told them, or the father himself would have told the investor at the time, whatever the case, so they can't claim Nansu, and they don't have a migui to say that we returned it either, because the father would have told them. So, the Gemara finishes off, Rav Amar, Hilchos Nishva V'Goyim Mechza. The halacha is like the Dayanim of Eretz Yisrael, that he swears and collects only the half that's a milva, the half that's a pikadin, they can claim that their father paid back, and we would believe them, you should have told them before they passed away, we accept the svar that the Malach HaMavis got him son. On the other hand, Mazutra says, the halacha is like the Dayanei Gola, that he can collect the whole thing. So, Omale Ravina Lamazutra Vahomad Rava Nishba Vagoyva Mazutra. Didn't Rava say that he collects only half? How can you, I mean, you're fine. You Mazutra are in a murder. You're entitled to argue with Rava. But are you in fact arguing? Rava is such a great amoda that we generally assume sometimes in the Gemara that other Chachamim, especially of the next generations, are not going to argue with him stamazay. So Rava said he collects only half. So why are you saying that he collects the whole thing? So why are you saying, yeah, Robert said he collects only half. Why are you saying he collects the whole thing? Amalei, sort of, Mazutra tells him, because we learn in all yeshiva that the other way around, the Dayanei Gola said he collects half, and the Dayanei Eretz Yisrael said he collects the whole thing. So yes, I'm not actually saying he collects the whole thing. When I say, Hilchsak Dayanei Gola, I mean, according to my version of the Dayanei Gola, which is that he collects only half. So it comes out that Rava and I are saying the same thing, just in different words. He's saying that Goyva Mechza, and I'm attributing that opinion to the Dayanei Gola, unlike throughout the Sugya, where we were saying that the opinion that it's half was attributed to Dayanei Eretz Yisrael. The Rashbam goes into a bit of detail over here that the bottom line is he collects only half. He only collects the half milva, the half that's pikadin. We, based on, will claim on behalf of the assignment that your father paid back the pikadin, and then, fine, they still have to swear a shavua called shalot kadonu abba, that our father didn't give us instructions before he passed away, and we didn't find a shtar to this effect among his personal effects, etc. So they do have to swear that shvua, but once they do, then they're potter from the half of the pikadin. The Rashbam goes on and discusses in detail in view of a Gemara in Shavuos that talks about the question when you're mafkid by somebody with edim, do you have to return to him with edim or not? So from all Gemara, it comes out you don't, because that's the whole basis for them being able to say that our father paid you back because that our father paid you back, and we don't require edim for that purpose. On the other hand, the Gemara in Shavuos seems to be implying that you do need edim. So the Rashbam discusses how we reconcile the two Gemaras, and Tosfos also discusses that the Gemara doesn't necessarily mean to say that you need to return it to him with edim. It means it's another point over there about what kind of shavua they need to take. So we'll learn more about those details when we learn Masechta Shavuos sometime next year, Bez Hashem.
So what's the halacha?
So the halacha is, in the end, that go nishba go for mechza. So in this case, where Reuven deposited money with Shimon, invested money with Shimon, when we're saying half of it is considered a loan and half of it is considered a pekadon, if Shimon passes away, and the children claim, whether Shemo or Bori, according to the different opinions, that our father paid you back, then he has to swear in order to collect from them at all. But when he swears, he's only going to be able to collect the palga milva, only the half that's a milva, because with that, we can't say nansu, he can't collect the half that's a pikadin, because for that, they can say that our father returned it to you without aid. Now, what they have is, you can find in Shulchan Aruch and in various other halachas for him, you can find, as we said before, when you make an iska, when you make this kind of investment, you have to structure it in a way to avoid issues of divis. The shtar of the iska itself is written in such a way to avoid such loopholes. You make it clear that you're not going to be the managing partner is not going to be believed to say that he returned it or that he suffered X amount of loss, and therefore that reduces the investor's share or whatever without adim. You can even write into the shtar that's not just going to be any adim, that you require particular adim, or that you require adim of a particular caliber or whatever, that kind of thing, in order to avoid these kinds of things that we're talking about in the Gemara, where somebody is going to make a claim and try to back it up with a nigger.
So that's just for heter iska.
So we're talking about a heter iska, but in general, what we're saying is, with pekadin, if Reuven deposits something with Shimon for safekeeping, and they write a shtar, Shimon would afterwards have the ability to claim that I returned it because he could have said nansu. Yeah, that's what we're saying. So again, to begin with, now that you know that, you would write the shtar more carefully and say, if you want to claim nansu, or if you want to claim that you returned it, then you need to back it up with such and such evidence.
You need to back it up with what?
With whatever kind of evidence you're going to write in the shtar, whether it's adim or whether it's shur,
Right. Shkoyach.